McDonald's has entered the Minecraft universe. Get a limited edition collectible with a Minecraft movie meal, crafted just for adults, featuring a choice of a Big Mac or 9 Chicken McNuggets. Plus, try the new spicy Netherflame sauce, only at McDonald's. Until 6th of May, from 11 a.m, medium or large meal, includes respective size of combination drink and side and one pre-selected collectible, while stocks last.
You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network. Your hosts, Jared Logan and Joe O'Brien.
What's up, dick shits? It's Glass Cannon Radio. You garbage brain ground huggers. I am your host, Jared Logan. I'm also a garbage brain ground hugger. And with me is the filthiest piece of turd this side of the Rio Grande.
Just Joe disgusting. O'Brien. What's up, Jared? How are you, buddy?
What a disgusting piece of crap you are.
And the same to you, my friend.
Yes. Welcome to Glass Cannon Radio, where we talk about all the topics that are floating around in the nerdosphere, and we let you chime in as well. Call us and let us know your opinion on it. And then I correct you on your opinion and tell you why you're wrong.
You're so good at that. You're so good at that.
Yeah. Before we get anything going on today, I have to give a shout out to Rosalie Grace Logan, who has turned 6 years old today.
Hey, congratulations. Oh, that's
Rosie,
wonderful.
Are you, if you're watching right now, please turn off your device and pay attention to your kindergarten class.
But she's so loyal, Jared. She's so loyal. She wants to
tune
in.
She's a loyal listener. She's a loyal viewer.
Yeah. She can never call in because she's always, you know, in kindergarten at school while we're doing this. But she'd love to.
Right.
She'd love to.
You don't know this, but Rosie is Naish Vorpal.
Wow.
Naish Vorpal.
Wow.
And she goes by the handle of Doc Robotnik. That's her handle on the Discord.
Rosie was in the Navy?
Yeah, Rosie was in the Navy. So we're in little kid birthday mode over here at Casa Logan.
Nice.
We got her a big red panda squishy stuffed animal and gave it to her this morning, and I've never seen someone happier to receive something. And this is why you have children, to vicariously experience pure joy again after not being able to touch it for so many years, you know.
But yes,
to see someone else experience pure joy is just it brings you back to life. So that's what's going on over at Casa Logan. We're got a big trip to Legoland planned for this weekend. Legoland.
Oh, yeah, I hear good things. Where is that? Is that in Southern California?
It's in Carlsbad, California.
Hmm.
About 2 hours south of LA. And we should do a Lego topic on Glass Cannon Radio sometimes,
because
that is a huge nerd topic.
I'd love to. I loved Legos, and my kids are into it now. So, I think it's a good time for a little Lego jam.
Who wasn't into Legos? Listen, if you are out there in the niche and you were not into Legos, call in. I want to find out how you have been twisted by your horrible childhood. Are you a murderer now?
Right.
Exactly. Are you a sexual deviant? You need Legos to survive as a child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've got a really jam-packed, full of fun show today. Let me tell you what we're going to talk about. First, we're going to get into the new Nintendo Switch 2 launch. The launch was this morning. There is a successor to the Switch, a sequel to the Switch that is going to be on shelves here this year. I think it's in June. We're going to talk about that. Then we are going to get into our main topic of the day. It just ended. Severance Season 2. The entire Severance television program What a beautiful nerd wormhole to go down. We're going to go down to the severed floor. We're going to forget who we are for a little bit. We're going to talk about that. After that, we were thinking, what's a role-playing game we could tie into this? And what role-playing game is more in theme and tone like Severance than Paranoia, the classic game, Paranoia? It has a new edition. I have run it, so we'll talk about that. Then we've got a little segment, a new segment for you that's called Your Next Watch, where we're going to tell you if you liked Severance, here are some other things we think you'll like. And we encourage you guys to call in for all of this stuff, but call in and also chime in on that. Hey, if you liked Severance, you might like this. And then finally, we have been collecting your comments for weeks and weeks now, and we are going to talk about some of the comments you've made on previous episodes that we didn't get to react to or respond to. So that'll be called Comments Below, and that's how we're going to round out the show. Joe, are you ready to do this?
Let's go, dude. I started bright and early this morning. Nintendo goes live with their Nintendo Direct stream to announce details on the Switch 2, and I'm pumped as a Switch owner myself. I want to see what's coming, what's happening, and I just love how quickly they turn this stuff around. It's like, we're going to do an announcement on April 2nd, and bam, they're like, the release date is June 5th. And to me, that sounds so soon. So Switch 2 coming down the pike June 5th, and they announce some of these games that are going to be coming out along with it, including Mario Kart World, an open world racing game, massively online potential for, 24 drivers or something like that. Obviously, the graphics look amazing, and I was like, holy shit. And speaking of graphics, there's like, it's going to have 120 frame per second capability, 4K capability, a bigger screen, slightly bigger screen. Fun new stuff with the controllers that can act as a mouse and stuff like that. But what jumped out to me, of course, as a huge Dark Souls fan, is the announcement of do I have this right? A Switch 2 exclusive From Software release of a game called The Dusk Bloods, I think it's called. The Dusk Bloods, that looks so sick. I mean, if you watch that trailer, it is Dark Souls, it is Bloodborne, it has a little bit of everything, plus a jetpack. Come on.
It looks so dark and gritty, which is surprising because Nintendo is usually like, help this happy dinosaur make breakfast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so to have that pivot and to be exclusive and have that pivot be on a handheld device, which will now also be able to have Elden Ring. If you love Elden Ring like I do, you'll be able to play that on Switch 2. But to have this new title come out that looks so sick, it's vampire related. You love vampires.
I love vampires.
You love vampires. Are you going to get a Switch 2, Jared? Is this like a day?
No, I'm not. No.
Well, how are you going to play the Dusk Bloods?
I'm going to watch a YouTube video of someone else playing the Dusk Bloods while I'm high. Joe, I can't buy these consoles. They take over my life. And also, you know how afraid I am of technology, Joe? I gotta tell you, the controller that connects to the TV but then comes apart and becomes three controllers, I get anxiety just thinking about it.
I mean,
I don't want to carry around a Switch. Like, I know that this seems probably insane to a lot of callers and guys. I'm with you. I hear that I'm insane, but like, I don't really, when I'm like on a train or on a plane, want to pull out the Switch and be like playing a full video game. But I know a lot of other people do, and I'm not hating on that. I'm not hating on that.
I love the Switch. I think that it's just a phenomenal system for how mobile it is. And I mean, it is, to me, you talk about Legos, it is a disgrace. You just told us it's your daughter's 6th birthday. You have this opportunity to hand her one of the greatest handheld gaming consoles out there and experience the joy.
Have you tried playing video games with a 6-year-old? Have you tried playing video games with a 6-year-old?
Yes, I have a 6-year-old.
I hooked up my SNES Classic, and me playing games with my 6-year-old was just an hour and a half of me trying to teach her how to jump. Just jumping into a pit over and over or like running right into the pit and me going, no, remember the jump button? And she's just always like, I don't know what that is. So
well, you needed to start training at a younger age. Perhaps it is too late now for Rosalie. She is, it's over.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll teach her to read books or something.
Right, right. Or become a great golfer. Yeah. There might be time for that. There might be time for that.
Oh, man, Joe, we went and visited friends over the weekend, and the husband of my wife's good friend is a great dude, but he was just like, hey, man, let's talk about golf. And I was like, hey, man, let's not, because I don't know one thing, have never done it, don't want to. And every time I have to respond like that to someone, you can tell that they're kind of like, Jesus fuck. Okay, dude. I guess.
Cool.
I guess we have nothing to talk about, you know?
That's so
amazing.
And
then I have to quickly get it over into movies. So quickly.
Okay, yeah.
Get it
into movies. Movies is a good middle ground, because you're not going to pivot to like, have you heard of the role-playing game Paranoia?
Yeah, like, that'll be quite a pivot.
That's not going to go well either. So
that would be quite a pivot. I don't know, man. With guys, you know, you got to talk about movies or sports, and you really can't like get into your families or how you feel about things, you know.
No.
So,
Yeah, that's so the best part about a long conversation about golf. You know what I mean? It prevents any need to venture into feelings or emotions.
Yes, exactly.
Which would be terrible. Speaking of feelings or emotions, before we get to callers, I'd love to hear anybody's take that wants to talk about the switch to the direct announcement that happened today. But I want to get first reactions from our good buddy McD, our producer of the show.
Yeah, McD.
McD is a huge Nintendo guy. If you remember a few weeks back on Beat McD, we did Mario Trivia. He crushed it because he's been
a
Nintendo fan.
That was 5 out of 5, wasn't it?
5 out of 5
on the Mario.
And he's been a fan of this for a long time. So, McD, why don't you – what were your takeaways on the Nintendo Direct? What are you thinking about the Switch 2 thus far?
I think I would have liked to have seen maybe different first party offerings out of Nintendo, right? I mean, overall, am I going to buy a Switch 2 on June 5th? Yeah. Yeah. You know, like I'm definitely going to be there buying, getting a Switch 2. I have a Steam Deck, I have a gaming PC. I have a MetaQuest 3. I don't need this, but I'm gonna get one because there's no Nintendo games on those things. Like, you buy a Switch to play Nintendo games. So,
would you settle into some Mario Kart World? Like, is that something you would do?
That sounds awesome. That's like Cannonball Run for Mario Kart, right? It's like a long extended open world campaign, but for Mario Kart.
That's one of the modes, yeah. And also,
I've never played Mario Kart like online with strangers. It's not something I've only ever done couch co-op, you know.
I have less and less opportunities
for that these days.
I don't recommend starting now.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be way too behind the ball.
Speaking of strangers, this new Switch is the first one to have like a chat feature, right?
Well, yeah, there was like a Wii. There was WeChat. There was like a microphone you could plug into your Wii that you sat in front of your TV. Nintendo's really bad at this stuff.
It's not what they focus on, right?
Well, it's not what they focus on, but I think they're really into, you know, making things that parents are going to feel good about,
right?
Letting their kids have and
without
supervision. Right.
Right. You don't really want your 6-year-old exposed to 14-year-olds throwing out racial slurs,
right.
Which is what every chat function on every other video game console is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be what it's for.
Yeah.
But
so strange that they're even including a camera.
Yeah.
To plug into this thing. I mean, it's cool. You know, there was a lot of speculation about what that C button was. Like, I don't know if you remember, C buttons were a thing starting with the N64. Those were like the yellow buttons.
The yellow.
You know, there was a C stick on GameCube. Now C means chat, I guess, instead of camera.
For one, didn't believe it. I'd like to see it in this Nintendo Direct. They go into how this microphone interior to the device that is the size of a pinhead is on, in the Switch 2 on a dock at the television, and they're showing a guy on the couch 15 feet away playing a video game and just saying to his friend, like, oh, man, that was a wicked turn, man. And like, and they're like, and your voice will come through crystal clear. And then they show a roommate working a blender right behind him. And they're like, and they'll never hear the blender. And
whipping up some margs.
I don't. Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
I still don't want my roommate making his smoothie while I'm trying to play Switch.
Exactly. You
know? Exactly. It's like, that's so goddamn rude.
Yeah. You know, what I found believable was just, I don't know how closely you watch, but they were showing, like, you can show the gameplay of the other people, like, below your screen, right? Like, you can have picture in picture. And that streamed audio looks so shitty and compressed and, like, low frame rate. And I'm like, this is real. Like, they're just showing you what this really looks like. Like, this is exactly what this is going to look like when you do this. So,
yeah.
I mean, kudos to them for not, you know, faking it, I guess.
But frankly, I don't really care that much about those kind of things because, like, I don't plan to play with anybody else except, like, my kids in my living room. So, like, I'm not too worried about those features. Bigger screen, is that a positive or a negative? Bigger screen. It's always nice to have a bigger screen, but, like, harder, a little bit harder to travel with, a little bit chunkier in your hands?
I guess. I think that's, like, standard now, though. You know? Like,
it's the exact same thickness as the old Switch.
It is. It's just
as girth. That.
Yeah, same girth.
That's same girth. Is it the same as a Steam Deck?
It might be a little bigger than a Steam Deck. Steam Deck's about that, right? But the Lenovo Legion Go is out. The MSI Claw, like we're in an age right now of handheld PC gaming.
Our Steam Deck's a little buggy. My friend had his on a trip I took with him, and he was like fighting with it the whole time.
I think it depends on what game you're trying to play on it.
If you're trying to, can you run mods on Steam Deck at all? Any mods?
You can run the Steam supported mods, sure.
Yeah, so the Steam supported mods are different than what you can get on your PC, right?
Yeah, but even that, like even on PC, like your mileage may vary on mods that you're putting on.
So it's possible that your friend was fighting with mod stuff because, like, I've heard the Steam Deck's pretty great.
That's Steam Deck's awesome. But I play Steam Deck type games on that thing. You know, I play 2D platformers, basically exclusively on that device. I'm not playing 3D shooters.
I always thought, like, strategy. I was like, it would be so cool to take Elden Ring on the road. And then I was like, wait a minute. That's going to be kind of hard to play. And, like, with that small screen and stuff like that, I think it benefits greatly for a 2D platformer or a tactical turn-based.
The important thing is, Joe, that you never look up. You want to never see the countryside around you, never look into the eyes of another person. Avoid that at all costs.
Then it'll be mission accomplished.
Yes.
Yes.
All right,
All right. Well, obviously more to come. They're going to do another direct on Mario Kart World, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to do another direct on that April 17th. So we'll find out more about that. I have held off. Actually, my kids actually don't have Mario Kart 8. I think it's Mario Kart Deluxe.
Eight Deluxe.
Yeah, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. We never got that, and I just – they've been having fun playing other games, and it's expensive. Those things never decrease in price. Like, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is never on sale, right? So I always kind of keep an eye out for it, but it's never on sale. And so now I'm wondering, like – oh, well, if I end up with a Switch 2, maybe just wait, until then and introduce, like, this huge open world Mario Kart for their first experience. That could be pretty fun.
Well, one thing that it flew under the radar at the Direct that I thought was an interesting feature, so long as enough games support it, is that, hey, you have two kids, you get them both Switch 2s, but you for some games, you're only going to need one copy of the game.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Game share. They're calling it game share. Yeah,
they're called the divorced dad package, where you can play remotely with your child.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. Interesting. More things to come. But I think I just wanted to get that hot news out there because it just dropped this morning. So that's fun stuff. But
yeah,
I think we can... think we can get on with Severin stuff. But thanks for the insights, McD, and for letting us know this was even happening. McD was like, sure. Yo, They're doing a direct to borrow. So that was cool.
Yep. It's very cool. Thanks, McD.
Thanks, guys.
And guys, while we're taking calls, you can chime in about the Switch if you like. We're going to move on to Severance right now, but if you have thoughts on the Switch 2, please let us know. And, you know, in order to call in, what do? You become a subscriber to the Nation. You go to our Discord. You go to the Glass Cannon Radio stage. You get on there and you raise your hand, and we will bring you up to the stage and we will talk to you. And if you're not already a subscriber, it's easy. Just go to jointhenation.com and you can join so quickly. You could be talking to us in 5 seconds. The time it takes to do it is a total of 5 seconds. Quote me on that. That's the truth. Okay. We come to our main topic, Joseph.
Yes. The beef topic of the day.
What I think is so funny is I was about to say Apple TV Plus's Severance, as if Apple TV Plus is the creator of it.
Right.
That's how we do all of this now. We're like, Netflix's Squid Game. You know what? It doesn't fucking belong to Netflix, okay? It just airs there.
Okay.
Actually, I think financially it does belong to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. They do own it.
But let's not get confused and start to think that Apple TV Plus is an artist. You're not.
Yes, let's not. We are here to talk about Dan Erickson and Ben Stiller's and Adam Scott's and everybody else's Severance. Season 2 just finished. Severance, of course, is the thriller, comedy, satire, drama, science fiction show about workers for a corporation called Lumen, which is mysterious and cult-like, who have opted to have a procedure where when they enter their workspace, they forget all memory of the outside world, of their outside life. And when they leave their workspace, they forget what they were doing while they were working. And I read some articles. I read some interviews. Dan Erickson, the guy that created this, he based this on a real thought that he had. He was going into a job that he hated one day, he says. And he thought, wouldn't it be great if I could just not remember the whole day and just get the paycheck, you know, like just not have to experience this work that I hate, but still get the paycheck. I would opt to do that. And then he said he thought about it for a while and he realized all of the ramifications of that, the horrible ramifications of that. And that is what Severance is about. So, Joe, tell me about your experience with Severance so far.
My experience with Severance was recommended by friends back in season one. And, you know, said that it was had a little bit of sci-fi elements to it and stuff. And I was like, all right, I'll check this out. And I started watching it. And I was very, very suspicious to start. So any new science fiction show, I'm always like, come on. Like, I always suspect it's going to stink. I don't know. I just have a kind of a pessimistic attitude.
Science fiction shows are very hit or miss.
Yeah. I usually worry that it's going to be like not good. And as I was watching it, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I like this hook. Like what you said. I was like, I like this hook. But I never took it to the logical extremes, right? Which is, it makes me think of Ursula Le Guin. And when I read The Left Hand of Darkness, I was so blown away by that. And I don't know if it was in the original release of the book or during an anniversary 25 years later or something like that, but she did a foreword to that book that I love. I think is so brilliant, that kind of lays out what science fiction is. And in one part of it, she lays out that science fiction is that anything taken to its logical extreme is going to be horror. Like, it's going to end up being horror. There's this kind of concept in there. And she's like, so science fiction so quickly and so easily can devolve into horror. You know, like it's right. An easy place to manufacture that kind of story. Anyway, read that forward if you ever get a chance. It's really, really well done. But it made me think of like I didn't foresee where it would go. And as it developed, I became more and more and more fascinated. And what I'll say by just a brief summary is that by season two, I was like, they took it even further than I had even thought after a full season, you know, of just the basic logical steps of what would happen, not in terms of the narrative, but in terms of like what this hook actually, what the ramifications actually are of this hook, yeah. right?
And no, so, that's really good sci-fi when it, you know, there's one gimme, meaning there's not a lot of different sci-fi concepts. There's one, which is there's a device that can make you forget when you go into a certain place. And then they explore all of the different things that could happen just from that, you know?
Right.
It's not about 18 things. It's about kind of one thing, but through examining that one thing, so many themes get illuminated and stuff like that. And the cast is so good.
Yeah, stellar. And I think another thing that helps that is you have, what, 20 episodes now of this show, I think, right? 20 episodes. And they keep
19.
They keep it small. Like, it's a small cast.
Yeah.
And that just really helps everyone shine. You don't need to have a million actors doing all this stuff. But it's small enough that even the side parts, the actors are so good. There's a lot of really good character actors, some of which I loosely knew or worked with in my old days in New York. You know, like good character actor type people. And yeah, it's really, really well done.
I never knew I would see a John Turturro, Christopher Walken romance. And I never knew how much I wanted it.
How much I needed it. Yeah, exactly.
How much I needed it. So the cast, I mean, everybody gets their own subplot. It really explores the main conceit, each of their subplots, and does great things with the characters. And we knew John Turturro before. We knew Adam Scott before, but mostly from comedy. But Britt Lauer is amazing. Zach Cherry, who I think I may have seen in one thing. Zach Cherry is amazing. Yeah. And I really got to give it up for the guy that plays Mr. Milchick.
Yeah.
Framel Tillman
is so good. Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to mention is like, by the end of it, he is one of my favorite characters in the show.
And season one, he's mostly an antagonist. Yeah. And in season two, they blow him up into a full character and they pull that off. You know, some shows, like, they'll be like, hey, it's Lost. And, oh, hey, here are the Taileys and here are the others. And we're going to make them characters now. I don't feel like they always pulled that off. But because he's just a core, like you said, a small cast, they're able to develop him into a bigger character, and it really works. It's really awesome.
And I think that Trammell Tillman, who I don't remember seeing before, I think it's all performance. Like, there's a decent amount. I think there were good choices made from a writing or directing standpoint in the sense of, like, they did a great job of show, don't tell, and they did a great job of, like, not making all of his choices super obvious or super one-layered, right? Like,
yeah,
he's very complicated. Like, even after everything that you see, you're not like, oh, man, he's a good guy. And you're not like, he's a bad guy. Like, you kind of don't know. It's really well done in that respect.
I mean, the show is a little bit about how people are trapped in this system. And it's a little bit how we all feel with, I'd say, almost any job that you could possibly have. You feel like you're kind of trapped in it, and that it sometimes makes you make choices that you wouldn't make if you were unencumbered by that job. So I think that really comes across really strongly in his character. Just a couple things I wanted to talk about. First of all, Dan Erickson, the guy that created this, where did this guy come from? Do you know his other credit is that he did the wraparounds for Lip Sync Battle?
No,
that's his other credit. And I read an interview with him and he was like, yeah, I've never been a showrunner before. I've never been staffed before on a TV show. I mean, that's shocking.
Did you read the story about how this came to be? I haven't. I'm asking, like, did you read any story, development story of the series? Like, did he have a history with Ben Stiller? Did somebody else connect them? Did he pitch this idea?
He did not have a history with Ben Stiller because Dan Erickson was like an unknown, a complete unknown in the entertainment world. And Ben Stiller was, of course, Ben Stiller. But Ben Stiller, I think, probably loved the idea. I read an interview with Dan Erickson. I read a bunch of reviews. But I don't know if there is like just a development history article out there. Please send it to us because I'd be very interested. But it seems like Ben Stiller kind of loved the idea and kind of plucked this guy kind of out of obscurity. And Ben Stiller is also a huge part of the show. I think that we can agree, because Dan Erickson said that Ben Stiller's the one that kind of, you know, has the clout to kind of keep the show at a certain tone and mood and keep people from messing with it, you know, and
making sure,
yeah, this sort of very specific, satirical, funny with no laughter kind of a tone to it that is also sad. And Ben Stiller's a big part of maintaining that. And Ben Stiller's direction in many of the episodes that he directed is just gorgeous. It's just really, really well done. The movie, I'm sorry, the show feels like a movie, and not all prestige dramas really feel like movies. Some of them try and don't achieve it. The other thing I was going to say is that finale for season one is 40 minutes of the greatest television I've ever watched.
Wow. Okay, great. So you and I have not talked about this. So at the start of season two, you had not seen any Severance. And you were like, pardon me, I was like, we have to talk about season two on Glass Cannon Radio. And you were like, all right, well, I'll go get caught up. I'll watch season one. And then I'll watch all of season two, and then we'll talk about it. So you and I haven't discussed any of this until today. And I have told so many people the exact words that just came out of your mouth, that it, this finale of season one is the greatest 40 minutes of television I have ever seen in my life. And it was hard to hold season two up to that bar, like for when it, for it to start.
It was like, and I don't think it quite hits those heights of that season one finale.
Agreed. But I just, that season one, it was every minute. Edge of your seat thriller.
Yeah.
Every single minute of every second. It was just so well crafted. It was brilliant.
I mean, they would switch plots and I'd be like, oh God, what's happening here? And then it would switch again and be like, oh God, what's happening over here? Like, everybody had this really clear and exciting arc that really came to fruition with that season one finale. And we're going to be spoiler heavy today. Basically, the Innies, the people that are down in the severed floor of Lumen, who don't have a life outside of work, they figure out a way how to take over their bodies when they're outside of work and see who they really are. And that is what happens in the season one finale, is they see who they really are and they explore that. And I mean, what a taking the genie out of the bottle way to end a season. They have to put it back in a little bit. And I was a little worried about that, but they still managed to develop some other plots that are really incredible. Like what's going on with Mark S's wife, Mark Scout's wife, and
this was another thing, right? So you have this character of Gemma, and by the way, we'd love you guys to weigh in if anybody wants to talk Severance.
Please raise your hand if you want to talk Severance.
You have this character of Gemma, who is as an outie, Mark S's wife. And as an innie, she's Miss Casey, right? Who, somebody we knew throughout the early parts of the show.
Who seems like just like another weirdo that works for Lumen.
She seems like another weird detached. And I think she's like HR, like therapy kind
of. She's wellness.
Wellness.
They call it wellness. And you go to your wellness visit and Miss Casey tells you things about your outie. Like, your outie loves chess and often wins.
Right. Your outie makes people laugh around a barbecue. Like, you know, like weird things that just like make you feel good about yourself. And so another thing I think they did great with season two is just going down that rabbit hole again, taking the one idea. And then you think like, well, what if instead of just going into work and not remember anything that happens for the work day, what if what we did is you walk into 10 different rooms and every time you walk in, you don't remember what happened. And then you keep testing people. Like, did you remember anything from that room? What about this? Does this ring any bells? Are we really able to cut off memory from all these different scenarios? Like, and each of those individual scenarios don't remember the others? I mean, really fascinating.
And you're basically fracturing someone into 10 different personalities when you do that, because what the show really explores is that when you create this person without memories down in the severed floor, you're essentially creating a new person. Mm-hmm. And if if the Audi quits their job, you're essentially killing that person because they will no longer have the lived experience of being alive. They will no longer exist.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's taking the concept to the extreme, like you were saying about Ursula K. Le Guin, and it does become horrific. You are erasing a person if you quit your job.
It's just, yeah, yeah, it's horrific. Let's see what the nation wants to say. Let's take some calls. Pacifist Jedi has some thoughts, perhaps, on Severance. Pacifist Jedi.
Pacifist.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. What's up, Pacifist?
Hey. So we haven't really gotten too deep into season two and the conversation yet, but I wanted to share just general thoughts about season two versus season one.
Please.
Great. That's okay. Because season two is more complex than season one, I have issues with just plot holes that seem very apparent in season two. Like, so much about season one is about how surveilled they are. And yet in season two, they're, you know, they do talk about like, oh, we're giving them like a longer leash and, you know, they can kind of like get up to more nonsense and it's fine. But like, they're also talking about, oh, this is the most important project of the company. This is the whole point of what we're doing. And yet they're just allowed to, MDR is just allowed to go wild. And I just have a really hard time with that as I watch the season.
Yeah, I hear you. I do think that there were plot holes. Nothing that bothered me too much. I didn't think of that one, but to address that one, I feel like one of the neat things that we saw is consistent breakdown within the management structure of Lumen. Like, you got to see how much infighting there was and miscommunication within the company itself outside of the severed floor. And so I thought, maybe that's a reason. Maybe surveillance is dropping because people are unfocused. They're not doing their jobs well. Obviously, Milchek is like, you know, he's got to kind of keep this job. But you also get the sense that he's like, F this place, right? Like, there's some of those elements coming in. So, yeah, maybe that describes some of it.
They are not closely watched. They're able to have full-on intercourse in empty rooms at certain
points.
You
would think they're way more closely watched now after the events of last season.
Right. It didn't really bother me, Pacifist, to be honest with you, but I did have that thought. But for some reason, it didn't bother me. Sometimes it's like... the factual, you know, the given premises of a show in terms of the reality of it, I kind of am able to ignore them if the show is good enough. Right?
Any other plot holes that bothered you, Pacifist?
No, mostly that one, which is just kind of like a whole season plot hole. Like, you know, the show is just so well made that I just kind of went along with it and was like, oh, you know, maybe they're just understaffed. Maybe Milchek is the only guy working on the Severance floor and they just
can't.
Well,
it does seem like that. Him and Miss Huang are the only ones down there.
Yeah, right. You have this, like, it's just him and an intern, basically. You know, yeah. They have to, like, run the whole thing.
Dude, it's so funny when they introduce her and Zach Cherry's character is like, why are you a child?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I really love Zach Cherry's character. And Pacifist, thanks for calling in. Thanks for weighing in on the plot hole. He's got me thinking about some of the other plot holes I thought of. They're kind of jamming into my head right now. But the Miss Huang, is that what it was? I don't remember her name exactly. Yeah, but she, like, or no, I was going to say that Zach Cherry's character from the jump, it's like you have to have that character that is sort of that straight man, so to speak, character that just is like such a regular guy, right?
Yeah.
In so many
calling
respects.
Calling it like it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Telling it like it is kind of guy, but also the try hard at the office, but not for any ultimate goals of the company, just because they love getting little rewards. It's such a great character. But then obviously that character deepens greatly. I mean, let's just talk about the fact you want to talk about great casting. Merritt Weaver.
Merritt Weaver is so good. And in everything, she's good.
Exactly. And
we've talked about Godless, haven't we, Joe?
I don't know if we've talked about it, but I love Godless.
I love Godless. She's in that. She's amazing in that.
Let's get another caller before we keep
I
want to
just say one thing. Let's get another caller, but I just want to know, what are some other plot holes that you noticed? I'm interested.
Let's get another caller. I'm going to put my thoughts together here.
Put your thoughts together.
Yeah. Ejnar, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. If you'd like to join us, Ejnar.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello, Ejnar.
Einar.
Einar,
thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sometimes on these international servers, I spell it with a Y. It makes it simpler, but it's Swedish.
Okay. Welcome. Good to have...
welcome.
Speaking of which, I just saw Skid in chat, and he said he's hanging out with Ellie, our Swedish friend, Eleanor.
Cool.
Yeah. So, hi, Skid. Hi, Ellie. Anyway, please, Einar.
Hi, Ellie. Thank you, longtime YouTube watcher, first time live watcher, but I just had to get in here for the severance discussion because
awesome.
I have tried so many times to find a TV show that I like, and it's just failure after failure after failure. But now I am this annoying guy that every person I meet, I'm just, have you seen Severance? Have you seen Severance? What about Severance? Did you watch that?
It's that good.
It's that good. And my favorite part about it is how excruciatingly slow it is. It's just they
spoken
just
like a
you
true
these...
Swedish person, Einar.
Yeah. Thank you. Exactly. It's just they give you only tiny, tiny nuggets to just feed on and keep you interested. And I talk about edging, like you said before, at the edge of your seat, right?
Yeah.
It's just so fantastic. I love it so much.
It's terrific. But I will say, I felt that in the first... See, here's what I sometimes tell people when I'm trying to pitch them on the show, especially people that are like wary because it's sci-fi and they don't like sci-fi or fantasy. I'm like, just try it. And let me try to explain. Even though I'm a fan of those genres in general, I almost don't like any of them that are made on TV and in movies, right? Like, there's only a rare few that I think are really great. And this one, I felt in the middle of season one was slow, just like Einar said. I felt that excruciating slowness. And I remember being like, I don't even know if I'm going to keep going with this show. Like, I like it. I like the way it's done. I love the hook, but it is kind of like grinding a little bit. When I finished the finale, I'm so glad I saw it through. When I finished the season one finale, you see why you needed every minute of the season, like leading up to it, right? Like it all built. And so what I tell people is like, even if you find at times it's a little bit slow, like stick with it because everything pays off. Like you get all the payoff for all the time invested.
It kicks in. It really kicks into high gear, I'd say around like episode 6 of the first season, right? Like,
yeah,
but it's, I thought it was fascinating and really cool up into that point. But yeah, you have to get like midway into season one before you're kind of like things start coming together and you start going, oh, holy shit, I can feel the momentum of this where it's going.
Yeah. It builds so fast. So, Einar, did you find this show on your own? Did somebody recommend it to you?
You guys did.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. You heard we were going to talk about it and then you just watched it all?
No, I think it was Skid mentioned it on Legacy of the Ancients.
Oh, okay.
Right on.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, on Legacy of the Ancients, Skid does a great job of like checking in every once in a while. What are you watching? What are you into besides Pathfinder? And he did, I remember he did a best of the year. He wanted everybody's like best TV shows of the year, best movies of the year, best books of the year, that kind of thing. And Severance was on all of our lists of best of the year, you know, the year that came out.
That might have been the case. That's the episode.
Might have been one of those situations. Einar, thanks for calling in. And thanks
Thank
for watching.
You, Einar.
Thanks for watching live. You're that longtime YouTube watcher, first time live tuner inner. So thank you, Einar. Please, let's have more folks doing it. Let's get... let's talk about one little plot. Call it a plot hole. Might not be a plot hole. I don't know. Let me throw this out at you.
Okay.
I feel like they hand wave a little bit. The correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering. The moment you first walk into a severed floor, the moment you first wake up on a severed floor, each time that Gemma walks into a new room, right? For the first time. It's like, how do you know anything? How are you not a completely broken nothing? Like, where does it keep what does it keep, right? Like, how do you know how to speak? How do you know your language? Are they just saying that this is all a base of animalistic knowledge?
All right, how much do you know?
Yeah, how come you can
how much do you retain?
How do you know what a dentist is?
Do you still know, yeah. Right? Do you still know who Michael Clark Duncan is, or do you lose that?
right. Yeah. Is that ever explained at all in even a little bit?
That's not a plot hole, Joe. That's a question you have.
Yeah, I guess it's not a plot. Well, I mean, I think it's kind of a plot hole in the sense that it's like, you're not explaining how this is possible, right? And I'm not talking about like scientifically.
Well, I think they're not explaining it because it's not. Yeah. You just said not scientifically. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go
not
ahead.
Scientifically.
I misunderstood.
But like, I guess, is it just, this isn't an interesting part of the show. And we don't need to explore that. This is fantasy, which I'm fine with. But I was just curious if, like, I missed anything in terms of them. Sometimes they'll even give a sentence or two to just sort of hand wave why they don't worry about this part of that. You know, because, like, the first thing you see is, like, Heliar, right? Like, waking up.
Right.
And, like, that's the first real experience you get with it is, like, her waking up. And she's already like, where the hell am I? What's happening here? Well, what are her memories before that? You know? Like, that's kind of
right.
What I'd be curious to see how they...
Yeah, it feels like their personality doesn't transmit, you know, because they have different personalities from their outies, but yet their knowledge of what a computer is and how to walk does transfer, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different version of the show where when they come down that elevator, they're just babies, you know,
and yeah, they're
like
that's pooping not
their pants and peeing their pants, and they're like. They're like in diapers and they're like rolling around on the floor all naked, you know, like that's a vision of the show that I can imagine, you know, that I'm thinking about right now. But I don't think that it would be a very good version of the show.
Jen with two N's has something to say on Severance.
Okay.
And we'd love to have Jen back. Jen.
Hey, kids, what's for dinner?
Hey, good to hear from you. Good to have you.
She
back.
Said the catchphrase.
She said the catchphrase. We need a sound effect.
I'm struggling with how I feel after watching it. My wife and I actually rewatched all of season one and did season two in like a week or so.
Okay.
And I'm frustrated because I feel like for every one answer we got like three more massive questions, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't feel satisfied enough with really what we learned. Because there's so much more going on. Like, what is going on with all the goat people? Were they born there? They're asking about belly buttons. Like, all of that whole thing. Like, what is everyone else in MDR working on? Like, we knew what Mark was working on. Like, we know from those temps that showed up that there's apparently a ton of other Lumen offices. So, like, I don't know. So, it's hard for me to recommend this show to people. Because, like, clearly I know it's... very good television, but it frustrates the heck out of me. So
well, I think
I don't
that
know
what
to...
you're actually, I think, Jen, I think that what you're kind of hinting at or getting toward is, are they just making this shit up as they go along? Like, they're hinting at a lot of secrets and asking a lot of questions, but I bet you the writers don't know the answers to those questions. And are later writing themselves out of corners that they've written into. And that can be a very dangerous way to create something like this, as we saw with the show Lost, for example, where they really didn't know what the hell the smoke monster was or why there was a polar bear on that island. They just wrote explanations for it later. Is that what you're kind of worried about? Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, I guess it's just more of that, like, I wanted more resolution. I wanted more answers, and yet I feel more frustrated. Like, I won't go into, I know there are some folks who haven't finished, but, like, at the very end, I was so frustrated because I feel like we were working towards one goal, and it didn't happen. But then after sitting with it...
Well, no, like, we were working towards one goal, and it did happen.
Yeah.
Well, because
they freed Gemma from the severed floor. That was the goal, and
yes,
it happened.
But Mark wasn't reunited with her. To me, that
was
the
goal. But Jen, that's called, oh my God, that's drama.
That's drama.
That's drama. That's it. Not everything is supposed to be happily resolved. That's not a story.
No, I like happy endings.
There's no
okay?
season three if they
I
do
like
that.
Happy endings. Yeah, no. It is. I also was like, no. But it's
you're
like,
supposed to feel that
exactly,
way.
Exactly. The character subverted what you wanted to happen. A character, for reasons that make very good sense, subverted what you wanted to happen and what I wanted to happen, admittedly. Yep. And I think that is just good storytelling. Now, I get the whole... So let me ask you this, Jen, because I think you bring up another question. It's a slight pivot, but there's the wider world question, right? And the goats. Let's just... There's so much going on, but let's say goats.
Goats
for one.
Are my least favorite
Justice
part,
for a meal.
By the way.
Goats are stupid. Now, are the goats, is the goat thing like, let's, and look, you do this in Delta Green, right? You do this in Call of Cthulhu sometimes. You like, you just put something surreal in front of the players and creep people out because it makes no sense. And everybody talks weird and everybody's like, the goats, be careful of the goats, whatever. But
they're not ready yet.
And there's never an explanation for it. And the whole reason they do that is because they want to throw in some surreal horror. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that, but is that why they did it? Maybe, you know? I don't think the goats are ever going to be adequately explained. Also,
absolutely, that's why they did it, Joe. They threw it in to disorient you and make it flip your reality a little bit. And then later they're kind of writing what it means. You know, they're figuring out what it means. But initially it's just an image to kind of disorient you and let you know how weird Lumen actually is the deeper you get.
But it seems like the only reason they do this, if we're doing like theories, right? The whole goat thing is like they are literally sacrificial lambs, like sacrificial goats, right? That's what they're there for. There's some sort of religious undertone here that is not fully explained.
Yeah,
that,
the like, Kier Egan cult. The Egan cult is a true cult. It is a true cult in the most basic sense of the word.
Right. And so then the other thing, Jen, from the wider world aspect is like, here's what I grapple with. But it's not this kind of show. It's like, how is this legal? Where are the people like, here's
well,
what I love.
It's not legal. None of it's legal. The way they treat the innies is not legal. They're using the technology to get away with abuse.
Right. But like other people know this. Why isn't it just reported? Why aren't they just shut down? Right. Like they don't really explain that. Like how come Marcus's
sister? The Egans are very powerful, Joe. The Egans are very powerful.
Right. But it's just not that kind of show. Like I think of the movie Minority Report as an example, is like an interesting hook, but part of the main storyline of the hook is like the political influence and legal struggle of this technology being implemented into the world. Some people think it's a good thing. Some people think it's a bad thing. Let's see them hash it out. That's the central part of that's going on in the background of the actual plot of the main characters. That doesn't exist in this show, in my opinion. I don't see any like, right?
McD has a thought, Joe. McD has a thought.
McD.
So one like and a reading that I like for you were just talking about, like how is any of this legal for how are people are being treated? Is I think you could read this that the outies are everybody enjoying capitalism, and the innies are all of the people who you don't have to know or care about or know anything about who are. You know, providing the means by which everyone else gets to enjoy society, right? And it's cruel and it's faceless and you don't need to know about these people. You don't want to know what they're going through. Like none of these things matter because what actually matters is the actual enjoyment and consumption, not the means by which it's produced.
And McD is nailing, I think, you know, the symbolism of the whole show. And Joe, I think you're talking literal, like why aren't the police arriving? And
well, no,
I don't think you can do that.
That's the Jen's call made me think of that aspect. I don't think it's that kind of show, and I don't think I don't need that to enjoy this show. But I just think that those are some of the other sort of questions that I would maybe like answered. I don't need to see it all play out, but it's like, how is this even possible? Not scientifically, but like, yeah. Sorry, Jen. Go.
Is Jen still on the line?
Yeah, Jen should still. Yeah.
Jen, are you going to watch season three?
Oh, yeah.
Even definitely. Though Mark didn't get back together with his wife?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say I hate watch things because I'm not at that point, but
I hate watch.
No, I'm not hate watching. You know, there's a lot of that whole thing. I like this show, but it's frustrating. I will continue to watch it in 3 years when it comes out. Yeah. And I'll have to rewatch all
That's
of
a
it.
Good point.
Like, it's funny because going into it, even with the rewatch, I was like, you know what? I think I would sever myself. Like, you know, sign me up. Like, if I don't have to work again. But then I think what season two taught me was, oh, the innie is really a separate person. So you would be condemning your innie to like a life of hell. And it's like, are you okay with that? Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Dylan kind of was. So we'll see.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen. Good perspective.
Thanks, Jen.
And yes, it is interesting to think about how can these people knowingly do this to, you know, to their innie, or maybe they weren't knowingly doing it before. Lots of people want to get in here. I want to get more people before we move on. Steve.
Yeah.
Steve. Join us. Talk a little severance Steve, are you still there? No? Original Jim. What about Original Jim? Are you there, Original Jim?
Indeed I am. Hello.
What's
Hello.
Up, Original Jim? How you doing?
Hey, good. Longtime listener, 2019-ish, I think.
Wow.
So I wanted to ask Jared, as an auteur of cinema, that last shot where it freeze frames on them running and then it slowly
yeah.
zooms in and it gets all grainy. What is that? It seemed kind of goofy to me, but I'm not an auteur, so I thought I'd ask the expert.
Well, I don't know is my answer. It kind of reminds me of stuff from the 70s
it
or early 80s.
It reminded me of stuff from the 70s. Yeah.
It just I think there's a little bit of De Palma in it, maybe a little bit of De Palma. But
yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't like it. I thought it was super cool.
It just seemed out of place. Yeah, because
it
didn't fit with the rest of it. Yeah.
Kind of like
do you feel, and that's that is, if I'm not mistaken, a Ben Stiller directed episode. His episodes are a little bit more stylistic than some of the other directed episodes. Were there other little flourishes like that bothered you?
Nope, that's the only one. It just stood out to me. And I was like, huh? Like it just kind of
well, it is,
out.
If
That's
I
all.
May, it is the end of an entire season, the last moment. So it's kind of like and button, you know, like
yeah,
if you're going to yeah. have a filmic stylistic moment like that, that's probably where you would put it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. But to also leave it. The audience with a last final moment that is stylistically, artistically nothing like anything before it. Is it's either a misguided ending that's, you know, just for art's sake, or it's like an interesting statement on what's to come in some way, right? Like, you know, these
I hear season three is going to be all grainy,
like a Tarantino movie,
close-ups. Yeah, it's going to be all that. So it's not going to be for you, Original Jim.
You know
yeah,
what?
I
you know
not.
What it made me think of, Original Jim, is like The Graduate. I thought of The Graduate a lot
right.
in that moment.
Well, in The Graduate, there's literally the, and it looks exactly like the way they're running as they run out of the
they
church.
They run out,
right?
she's in the gown and everything.
Right.
But instead of freeze framing it there, they just get onto a bus, and then it's just them sitting for a while on the bus, and the yeah. big moment is over, but they keep filming. I love the end of The Graduate.
Yeah, thanks really for that, cool. because I was wondering if it was a callback, like, some people not mentioned there's a lot of subtext to this show. So I was wondering if it's a callback to something classic that I just don't know about.
Have you ever seen The Graduate?
A long time ago. I'm old. I'm older than Skid.
Oh,
a
dear.
Lot.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, God in heaven. How are you able to operate technology?
I know. Yeah, how did you get on Discord and have a great sounding microphone? This is astounding.
Yeah. Well, a guy from a YouTube channel gave me this microphone, but like I don't do the Twitch. And I don't watch YouTube for you guys. I just listen.
Well,
I don't
yeah,
do this
right
newfangled
on.
Twitch stuff. But anyway.
I don't think that's a callback to anything.
Okay.
I don't think that you're supposed to go, ah, yes, the shot from the parallax view. I don't think you're supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
All but right.
You
say,
might
Ben
be
Stiller, I love,
overthinking
I love Ben
it,
Stiller.
Original Jim.
Okay, yeah, I think I am. But, you know,
yeah.
man, Ben Stiller's a genius. Like, I'm a big fan of his since Tropic Thunder. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Tropic Thunder's great.
Thanks for the call, original Jim. Well said. Player Guy, are you there? Player Guy?
Hello.
Hey, welcome back. Guy. What do you got on Severance?
Don't hate the player, hate the game, Joe.
Exactly. I wanted to bring up, I guess, another lens. McD was mentioning the capitalist kind of lens, which I think is pretty clear. But the other sort of theme that the show is tackling is really the ethics of birthing and bringing people to life and what your responsibility is to them. I don't know if you noticed that as well, but there's a lot of connections, obviously, with Mark and Gemma trying to have a kid and birth lodging that they go to.
And
then there's also a line in the first season from the doctor. I'm forgetting her name. The kind of person that's helping merge Mark together again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the guy's sister or something?
We're talking about the doctor who knows how to do reintegration.
Yeah, yes, isn't she right, yeah. Yul Vasquez's sister or something like that? Or
I don't believe wife? That she's anyone's sister.
Okay.
No, sorry, yeah. I know that she used to work for Lumen, but she mentions at one point in the first season saying to Mark, what does she say? She says the version of you in there is just a child. You brought them to life without their consent. They didn't choose to be alive, but they're in there now. Which was a very direct echo to some real philosophical arguments around, what is the responsibility to a life you create? So if you were interested in that, because I did some philosophy in university, there is she kind of almost verbatim quotes a philosopher when she's talking to Mark in that scene, whose name is, I think, David Benatar. Anyways, the show is tackling pretty strongly also, along with the capitalist lens. When are you, what is your responsibility to this life you create? What is the harm in just having them exist? Is it harmful for Mark S. to exist at all? Or now that he does exist, what do you owe him as a person? And obviously the end of season two is really making a strong case that he is owed just as much as Mark outside.
Yeah.
I think especially I really love
the conversation between Mark S. and Mark Scout that happens. That was the highlight of the finale for me, mm-hmm. And it feels like it's a lot about what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. I think that was my highlight as well. And especially there's a point in that. Have any of you played or know of the game Soma? It's a horror game, I think, by Frictional Games, something like that.
No.
No.
Okay, well, anyways, there's this conversation when Mark is talking with his innie version. I think you can really tell that, and they make it obvious that he's still condescendingly thinking of his innie version, right? He's still seeing that innie version as a bit, I don't know, I don't think he sees him as fully...
Lesser, inferior.
He sees him as lesser, and they make it clear when he's messing up Helly's name and not really caring, when he tries to talk to him a bit like a child. And I think when the outie Mark starts to talk about reintegration, he is convinced that he's going to be the one in control in the driver's seat when all is said and done. Like, he might have some other memories, but he's ultimately the human that matters. Whereas I think innie Mark catches that and knows there's something wrong here. I can tell that you're talking like an outie. You think that you're in control of this vehicle.
Very interesting points. Yeah, and thanks.
Incredible.
For
calling me. Yeah, fascinating to look at it through birth, and I didn't connect all that the birthing lodge and all of the different things that bring it back to that kind of theme. Really, really cool.
Soma is an extremely highly rated video game that I've never heard of.
Looks like I'm going to have to take a gummy and watch a playthrough, Joe.
It's from 10 years ago. Extremely positive reviews. It is a sci-fi horror game set beneath the Atlantic Ocean. Struggle to survive a hostile world that will make you question your very existence.
As long as it's super Japanese, I'm in. I like anything that's doesn't feel quite Western. Joe, do you think it is time for us to move on?
Yeah. You know what? Let's do one more. We have a lot of callers, so I want to take one more person. One more person.
One more, God damn it.
one more person get their what about Max Hatch K? Do I have that right? Max HK.
Hi.
Max HK. Hello. Thanks for joining.
My pleasure. I had a lot of different comments, but I'll just pick out the one I feel most strongly about.
Thank you.
Okay.
Because there's so much to think about in this show.
Really is.
I was drawn to Joe's comment about surrealism and like things like the goats really being pointless. I think that's very much part of the point, because I think the whole season has been really good about exploring the cult-like parts of Lumen. So like the hieroglyphics on that goat sacrifice altar being just like symbolism for symbolism's sake. Mm-hmm. The Kier's mythologized backstory, the way Milchick and Natalie are degraded in these very like anti-intellectual and race and gender centered ways. And those are all like major parts of real cults. I've recently been watching some video essays by these YouTubers called Knowing Better, who does like videos about high control groups, and Alyssa Greenfell, who's a former Mormon. And a lot of these things come up again and again, like elaborate and pointless rituals and rewriting and mythologizing their founder's backstory and excluding and denigrating people who are like kind of smart enough to see past some of that. So I think like that kind of those things that seem kind of pointless are, I think, are kind of meant to be.
You know, I think the fact that the show brings out what I like makes it into a literal cult is really fun and interesting, because I don't know if you've ever worked for a major corporation, but they do mythologize their founders.
Absolutely.
They do. When I worked for a network television show, the amount of enthusiasm you had to show every day, that was the thing that killed you. You know what I mean? Like, doing the job, doing a good job, things that I was more than willing to do. But you also had to be like, I love this show and I love what's happening on it and I love being here and I love the CBS Corporation. And that's fucked up. But all jobs make you do that. And that's a fucking cult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good point, Max H. Thanks for bringing that up. Like the culty aspects are, it is, Jared. It's so cool how it's taken to a little bit of an extreme, of course. But
yes.
It's not. So I once worked a job briefly when I was desperate and like just, I was working in the restaurant business. I was hating my life. I was like, I want to do something else. And I got this opportunity that seemed like an opportunity, but it was a trick. And it was like a pyramid scheme. Right. Like a classic pyramid scheme trick. They called it, it was a marketing position. And I had studied marketing in school and I was like, yeah, maybe I can do this. Well, you find out very quickly that it's like sales and it's like door to door sales, like cold door to door sales stuff for like these coupon books and stuff like this. Right. But the way that they talked about the founder and the creator of the company, it was always this, it was like, it was mythological. It was always this. So he goes to a Yankees game and he has this idea and he goes and he does this. And it's like, why aren't people thinking of this amazing idea that's going to like change the financial landscape for everybody that like gets it, right? That gets in at the right time. And like, why worry about dealing with bosses or paychecks or all these like typical things at work when you could do this and make so much money with other people working for you, right? All this kind of stuff. And I did it for, I want to say like 3 months, maybe 4 months. I was promoted 3 times during that stretch.
Wow.
They had all these rankings. Like there were a million different rankings. So you always felt like you're getting promoted. They do these morning meetings. They were all this like rah, rah, rah stuff. And I was just sitting there like, this is insane. It was crazy. Yeah. Anyway, I could tell more stories about that another day, but it was a crazy job.
It's in this show, this horrifying thing that companies do where it's not enough to own your time. It's not enough to own your work. They also have to own your heart and your mind.
Your personality.
And yeah, and that's fucked.
Yeah.
And that's what a cult is. That is what a cult is. They own your heart and your mind.
I think I thought very early on in the show. Sorry, I don't want to move on just yet. I think I felt very early on in the show that it wasn't a cult, that it was a like a megacorp, like a dystopian megacorp is sort of how I thought about it.
Well, it is that also.
It's that also, but you really do get the sense it is much more a cult by the end of this season. I think that's a lot more clear. Can we just rattle off a few more things before we move on? Like, just favorite moments, moments. I don't know if there's anything.
Oh, God, I'm not ready for that. I didn't know we were doing it. Favorite moments.
No, I didn't even write anything down. There's just a couple things I want to mention that I thought were so great. In the finale of season two, I loved the back and forth. Like you said, you thought that was your favorite moment.
Yeah.
With the video camera. That was really cool. How do you end a scene that good? Absolutely knocked it out of the ballpark. Because if you remember, these like, if the next thing I see better be the severed floor, or I'm not doing anything to help him out. And he just walks out and it's like, and it's the severed floor. I thought that was so freaking cool. Because it was like, you know, as the viewer, so much time has passed. You have no idea how much time, but like time passed that they cut out all this stuff they didn't need, right? The arguments, the debates. Can you believe this fucking guy? Blah, blah, blah. His sister being like, he said it. I don't know, or, you know, whatever. Like, you got to do, if you want to try to get, they cut out all of it. Leave it all to your imagination. And just in one frame, they just move the story a huge jump ahead. I thought that was brilliant. I loved that. I thought that was such a cool part. Somebody mentioned it in chat here. I want to highlight it. Episode 7. Of season 2, which is where they show the backstory of Gemma and Mark S, I think is awesome because it's weaving in. I love doing this in Delta Green. I did this a lot in Impossible Landscapes, having people remembering things, but then also experiencing something presently, and they're getting twisted together. You start to not realize what is happening now and what was, you know what I mean? What's real, what isn't. I thought that whole episode was just so brilliantly done. To me, that was the episode that most sort of mimicked the art I felt of the finale of season 1, where it's just like every passing scene was more and more like, and then they add the baby stuff in, and then they had the fraying of the marriage, which, you know, seemed to be a lot to deal with the miscarriage and stuff like that. All these very realistic sort of themes mixed with him trying to, like, you know, mind jump into his innie. And, you know, I mean, it was just so cool. Thought that was really,
it was
really
so
neat.
Cool. It was so cool. I really liked the outdoor excursion episode.
Yeah. At first I was like, what? Like, this is just a little, this is a bridge too far. Like on the creepiness and or of the, like, this is a corporate retreat. You know, like, you're putting them out in these freezing temperatures and tents. Like, this is so stupid.
And then they tell him the story of how the forgotten brother of Kier masturbated on the ground and then was smited. And his eyes oozed out his head. And then Trammell Tillman, Mr. Milchick, is like, and it's literally true. It really happened.
That's so good.
That's a highlight for me for some reason.
Well, that, you know, sort of ends up with what I think is one of the best climactic scenes of season 2 in the drowning of Heliar. I thought was a phenomenal scene. So intense. I loved, Zach Cherry? Is it Dylan? Is that his character?
Dylan G.
Wasn't he screaming down to Bert? Right? It was Bert, right? Or is that Christopher Walken? Am I mixing them up?
That's Christopher Walken. You're thinking of Irving.
Irving, yeah. Irving he's like, Irving, stop! Irving! I mean, it's so raw and intense. That scene was great. Super, super awesome. And, I mean, did you know when she walked in the door that it wasn't her?
No, of course not. I don't think anybody did. That's, you know, that's the trick.
I knew it the second she walked in. And I am never
really
on top of anything. But as soon as she said she didn't remember what happened when she was out, I was like, I don't buy that she doesn't. That
I thought
she's
she was covering.
Yeah, that she's
too
guilty.
No, I thought she was. Yeah, you didn't buy that.
Not for a second. I was like, there's no way that Heliar would do that. Like, she wouldn't, you know, like, she wouldn't cover that. Like, it was just, and I thought how brilliant it would be, not just from a narrative writing perspective, but from the company perspective, to put her in there and sort of like see what's happening, what's going on, whatever.
A night gardener.
As a spy. Yeah, a night gardener.
The night gardener. I met this guy. I think he was like a gardener.
So funny. Irby's just so mad. He's like, the night gardener? So good.
Joe, we have to move on.
Okay,
we
must. I'm sorry.
We've got so many other topics.
I promise not to say much more about anything else. Okay. Please, continue.
Hey, look, I mean, the way the show works is if you have more to say about Severance, when you call in, we will talk about Severance. But we are going to move on right now. We're going to move on to the role-playing game portion of the show, and we are going to talk about Paranoia.
Yes.
I don't know how many people have had experience with this tabletop role-playing game, but Paranoia is a classic tabletop role-playing game. It's from the 1980s. It is ahead of its time because it was a role-playing game far outside the mold that was created by Dungeons and Dragons. It is a science fiction dystopian satire role-playing game. And that's why it is a perfect companion piece to Severance, because like Severance, it literally mostly takes place in a series of tunnels beneath the earth. The premise is this, okay? You are citizens of Alpha Complex, and Alpha Complex is what's left after the entire world was nuked. It's this underground series of chambers that is controlled by a ruler called the Computer, which is a literal computer that runs society and might be malevolent to human life. It acts really nice and polite and friendly, but it sends people to their death constantly. And you play a troubleshooter, which is a citizen who has been randomly assigned to some sort of dangerous mission. You're given like a little bit of reflect armor and a laser, and you are sent to root out traitors to the computer. You are sent to discover mutants. It's illegal to be mutants. It's illegal to belong to one of the secret societies like the Sierra Club. But, the other thing about your character is that all characters are mutants and all characters also belong to secret societies. So you're sent to root out these traitors, but you in fact are a traitor. And during the game, if you discover one of your fellow players is a traitor, it's your job to execute them on sight. So you can see how this leads to complete chaos. And that is sort of a design, not a bug, but a feature of the game. It's kind of supposed to descend into complete chaos. I just played the most recent edition of the game by a guy named W.J. McGuffin and Keith Garrett. This was originally created by some guys named Dan Gelber, Greg Kostikian, and Eric Goldberg back in the 80s. The new edition is, okay, so this is what I love about it, Joe. It's a core rule book that is this thin.
Yeah.
Not quite as thin as an indie game, but very, very thin and easy to digest, easy to read. The game rules are really interesting, and they add some unique things. Like, for example, initiative is done with like a bidding process, where if you want to kill someone before they kill you, you can kind of bid to get in front of them in the initiative, which I think is very cool. There are a lot of little cool mechanics like that, but at core, it's very simple. I got to play with Kevin Culp, the guy that designed Time Watch and Swords of the Serpentine, and we had a blast with it. So I'm curious what your experience is with Paranoia, and if anybody out there in the niche has played Paranoia. Joe, I hear you had an experience with it that wasn't as positive.
You could say that.
Okay.
So here's my experience with Paranoia, as brief as possible. I played Paranoia for whatever reason. I don't know why. It was one of the first games we ever played in New Game Who Dis. So like, I never played any other role-playing games besides Dungeons and Dragons
only.
And Pathfinder. So when I was like coming up, I had friends, but McD's older brothers and stuff, they played other games. They played horror games and stuff like that. I never remember playing any other RPGs besides D&D. Then I played Pathfinder. It was all I played. So now all of a sudden, throw me into a paranoia game. I don't know. I think there's a chance I hadn't even played Call of Cthulhu yet in my life.
Right.
When I played Paranoia. And somebody told me it was going to be like kind of like Portal, which I had played that video game. I was like, okay.
I would agree with that very much. Yeah.
Thematically, it's like Portal. I was like, okay. And to sum it up very simply, I didn't understand the concept of a game, a role-playing game, that didn't have like a move action and a standard action. Like I didn't understand a game where combat wasn't in rounds that had very specific rules, or that just went for long periods of time in this like kind of elusive sort of gameplay, and that it had like all these PvP elements to it and stuff like that. And I hated it. So at the end of it, and so I'm like, well, I don't have time to get over there and like rip that thing off the wall. And Troy is running the game and he's like, just do whatever you want. Just tell me what you want to do. Anything you want to do. We'll like talk through it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but how many actions do I have? Right. Like I couldn't get my stupid head around it. So I finished it and I was like, that game sucked. And I have no interest in ever playing it again. And now fast forward to now. All these years later, and particularly after watching Severance, and I'm like, I think I need to go back to Paranoia again, because I think that I would love playing in that world. Now, understanding so many different games that play so differently in their rule sets and how, you know what I mean? Like, I can't explain it other than to say that I was very, I had very limited experience at the time, and I couldn't wrap my head around how the game played. And I think now. I would feel a little bit better about doing that.
I think if you're going to play it, it is important to have those conversations about how this is going to be different, because even if someone's used to things that take place in theater of the mind, or, you know, don't have an action economy and stuff like that, Paranoia is still a little bit of a jump, because it is a satirical role-playing game. Like I said, there's a lot of PvP, which is a lot of chaos. And the thing that's hardest, and this is hard to get in any role-playing game, is it has a tone. It has a satirical tone. It sets a certain mood. And that can be really hard to nail, even as the game master, let alone players who kind of bring their own tone with them. So it really is important before you play Paranoia to get everybody on the same page, to let them know what's going to happen to them when they play this game.
Without just saying like satire or satirical, can you describe the tone? Like even if it's just using other examples of fiction. Because I can't quite put my finger on the tone. Yes, there's this computer that seems very friendly. You know it has to be pure evil, right? But you can't quite prove it, whatever. And then why is it PvP, right? Like, can you explain the tone? Well, I guess you said you're hunting people that are mutants or whatever, but I felt like they were like scores. Are there scores where they're like, you wanted to rank higher than your allies in certain...
Right. So, yes, in the new edition of Paranoia, which I think is very funny, is after you go on these missions where you kill people mercilessly, including your own teammates, the computer then gives you superlative awards that get attached to your file, you know, that say, you know, most bloodthirsty and things like that. So I think that's really, really funny. It reminds me a bit of Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In fact, I'd say if anybody's read Dungeon Crawler Carl, they will get the tone to Paranoia immediately. It's sort of that sort of comedy mixed with a massacre kind of a tone.
Dungeon Crawler Carl will come up in the comments below segment, which is coming shortly.
Yeah. I wrote down a bunch of things. Listen, there are elements of 1984 by George Orwell. There are elements of Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, if you ever had to read those in high school. There are elements of Franz Kafka, but there are also elements of, say, the Terry Gilliam movie Brazil, or Dr. Strangelove, if you like that. All of that mixed with...
I'm no expert in this field. Is there any Monty Python to it?
Absolutely. Okay. Although I would say it's not a completely absurd world. It's not filled with non sequiturs. It follows its own logic very very stringently, which
but,
is.
But I, that, when I first read it, it seemed to me like it should be funny, like really, really funny.
It is maybe the only actually funny role playing game. I know that there have been other role playing games that attempted to be hilarious. I think this is, for my money, my opinion, this is the only one that actually does it. The rule book is really funny to read. And that was true of old editions as well. And I think it's a really funny world because, but you got to get that kind of dark, bleak humor of it. You know, everything is stacked against you. You are a tiny cog in a gigantic machine with no help, hope of ever escaping or achieving anything of value. You know, you are, as a troubleshooter, you are the definition of expendable. And you kind of have to play freewheeling like that. You've kind of, well, what the game does is it gives you 6 clones, which are essentially 6 lives.
Right. So I remember this just, now. Yeah.
So you can just play balls to the wall and let your character die. And then the clone shows up and that character, you know, your same character, but it's a clone. So you can keep playing. And I think that a lot of players of tabletop role playing games, their entire thing is playing carefully and cautiously and, you know, and analyzing risk and minimizing risk. Paranoia doesn't like any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what paranoia is. It's about having fun and kind of going balls to the wall and putting yourself out there and embracing that the universe ultimately hates you and is trying to crush you.
DeSicchio in Discord chat says if he feels the tone is also similar to Catch 22, just with a
That's
different
a great,
content focus.
Yep, absolutely. I would agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah. We got to play another game. We got to play another game now that Joe, since you have
maybe you run a little paranoia for me. I don't know. That could
I would
be
love
fun.
That. Yeah, that I would love that.
Let's see if anybody has anything to say on paranoia or severance. Loki Thunderson has their hand up. Loki, if you'd like to like that last. I like that name, Loki Thunderson. Your mic is muted. You'll need to unmute that and then you could join the call. Yeah, I've been feeling for a while I need to go
Hello.
Back to. Oh, there he is. What's up, Loki?
Hello, Loki.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Hey,
what did
Don't
you want
let
to
it
talk?
Happen again. Don't let it happen again.
That's right. I was running around my house when this went out. I didn't think I was going to come. One of my all-time favorite games. I haven't played it for years.
Oh.
But this whole discussion brought back wonderful memories of the time I ran it. And it was like the second or third edition of the game. And they came out with a paperwork supplement that was just all fours. That you could pocket and hand out. And the bell of the ball, the cream of the crop, was the form request form.
The form request form.
It exists. And I was running around my house, literally, when I got called, I'm trying to find where I had it. It's in like an old binder from like 1987 or 8. I can't remember. But it was so much fun. But you know, I listened to that new game boot as well as going on. It kind of broke my heart a little bit, but at the same time, I totally understood it because this is not something you can just throw your average D&D player into without kind of explaining it. And when you have this kind of playful adversarial, GM, which I think is a kind of fun way of referring to that. It may seem, I don't know, a little tough to get into, but
yeah. It's like, shocking that it's such an old property because it kind of came along before I think people were quite ready for but it was hugely popular, but it is so different from the D&D mindset.
It had various complexities as they went. The original game got really, really super complex. It was like there were multiple alpha complexes, and they had to keep kind of shrinking the world to like get back to the basics. And there was a point where the rules were kind of difficult, like were not straightforward. and a
right. The rules got quite complex in some of the editions. Yep.
And it literally said how to smoke it up. And I'm like, okay. But the one thing that I did that I kind of made my thing was that I would pick one clone who would be my favorite. I picked him randomly, and I rewarded him for everything that went wrong, and I never killed him, but I killed everyone else.
That is arbitrary in the way that the computer is arbitrary and ruthless. That is beautiful.
He was possibly the worst of the lot. He destroyed an entire sector of Alpha Complex to finish a mission to kill a graffiti robot. And he got rewarded for inventive problem solving.
I ran the module that's right out of the new book, the current core book. And in that module, the first person you have to take down is the person who gives you the mission.
I think my players took her out with a nuke.
I think that that actually happened. Accidentally a nuke, I think. But
you can actually, and this is the film. Like, I was just like, and then it got to their heads where like, oh, okay, if we do the worst thing, we'll get rewarded for it. But if anybody else did the worst thing, they would immediately be I just wanted to turn them against one player.
Yeah.
That's great.
Great.
Well, Loki, thanks for the call. That's a true paranoia fan right there. That's great. I mean, the form, request form.
And you can see how this ties into Severance. You can see someone in Severance having to fill out a form request
form. Well, I'm telling you, having watched Severance, I'm like, now I kind of want to go back and play a little paranoia. Like, I kind of want to have that sort of closed environment, you know, mindset. And this is the only world you know.
Dystopian nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatchamacallit, Narky on Discord chat says, I played in a paranoia LARP once with water pistols and numbered lanyards for clones.
That's awesome.
Isn't that great?
That's cool. I would totally do that.
Yeah. Anybody else want to talk? No, I don't think anybody else wants to talk paranoia right now. Let's either move. I don't have any other thing on paranoia. I think we need to play one time. That'll be fun.
I think we need to play one. I think that we need to talk a little bit about comedy in role-playing games because, you know, the form request form, thank you so much, Loki, for bringing that up. That's legit just funny. Paranoia always had really actually funny stuff like that in it. But I think other attempts to make funny things in role-playing games always fail. And I'm trying to think of, like, other comedy role-playing games. There was Joe, I wonder if you've heard of any of these. You know, there was a tabletop role-playing game called Tune.
Nope.
And it was, it was by Steve Jackson Games, T-O-O-N.
Tune. Okay. Where you played
cartoons. And you were supposed to sort of mimic, Looney Tunes cartoons, and I'm just realizing as I'm looking at it that the guy that designed Paranoia also designed Tune.
Oh my gosh.
And I have a really embarrassing thing to admit. Tune was one of the first role-playing games I ever owned. It might have been the first one.
Really?
Yeah, talk about like starting with the opposite of the basics. I may have played Dungeons and Dragons before that, but I think the first one I bought was Tune. And you know, it had all kinds of rules, but you kind of had to create your own funny with that one. I'm going to see if there's any others that are, you know, in the video game space, there were vanishingly few funny games either, you know, funny role-playing games. I can think of, have you ever heard of Leisure Suit Larry?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I know Leisure Suit Larry. You know what I think is legitimately pretty funny and also a very good video game is Borderlands. Did you ever play Borderlands or hear about Borderlands?
I did not play very much Borderlands. That's definitely a role-playing game, right?
It's like a shooter, but it has role-playing game aspects, you know, if memory serves, where you level up certain stats and stuff like that. But it's it's very funny, hilarious experience, but also really well designed game too. If a game is just funny but not an interesting game, it's going to suck. You know what I mean? Yeah. If a game is an interesting game and it's really trying too hard to be funny, it's going to suck. So it's a very hard target to hit.
It lines up with Severance, but Portal and Portal 2 are both hilarious games.
Yeah.
Yes, they're really
that
funny.
That was what was mentioned to me as the inspirational sort of media look for Paranoia. As I said earlier, it was like, think of Paranoia kind of like if you were in a Portal game.
Yeah, absolutely. I just found another role-playing game that I remember being really funny, which it's called Inspectors. And it's you know Inspectors.
Yes, I played Inspectors. This is like pre-Glass Cannon days, actually. I was invited over to a buddy invited me to a friend of a friend's apartment. I didn't know anybody there except one buddy. He was my Pathfinder GM at the time. He was GMing a game with Skid and I, McDee, and Troy. And I went to this guy's apartment, and he gave us Inspector's character sheets, and we played like a 1 hour, 2 hour demo-y kind of thing of just Inspectors. And that was super fun.
If you don't know Inspectors, it's a paranormal investigation role-playing game where you are assumed to be part of a reality show that is inspecting paranormal phenomenon. And so there are even confessionals. Where it's just like you talking about what's going on, your character talking about what's going on. And I remember it honestly being a funny game, like to read and to play. So
Loki Thunderson, who was just on the show, says in chat, Inspectors, Ghostbusters with the serial numbers filed off.
Right.
That's kind of the vibe. It felt very Ghostbusters when I played. It was so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess there is comedy role playing to be had out there. And I usually don't try to mix comedy and role-playing games because I find that, it kind of happens by accident. If you're playing a really serious Pathfinder game, no one needs to try to be funny. Funny stuff is going to happen. The dice is going to make funny stuff happen. People trying their best to role-play is going to make funny stuff happen, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't really
trying
have to like
honestly role-play well
right.
is what makes funny nonsense happen.
Yes,
you know, like
absolutely.
Trying to make funny nonsense, I feel like falls flat with me most of the time.
I think it always falls flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to like really play it honestly, play it sincerely, play it seriously. And, you know, that goes for these comedy role playing games as well. If you're playing Paranoia, you should play the reality of the character in Alpha Complex being pushed around by the computer. And the comedy will take care of itself.
Yeah.
It'll take care of itself.
Good
so
note.
That's just a little bit about Paranoia and comedy role-playing games. Now I think we can move on to a little segment we thought we'd try where we're calling it Your Next Watch because that's what appears on Netflix, right? After you watch something, after you finish something.
Yeah, I think it's an algorithm-y thing where it's like, well, if you like this, check out this. There's because you liked or because you watched, then there's also your next watch, which is kind of demanding in a weird way.
Oh, it's incredibly boundary breaking.
Very like, presumptive. But
I'll decide what my next watch is. Okay?
Right.
Maybe it's my children. You know, like I might turn the TV off.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is just recommend some things or just talk about some things that if you liked Severance, you will also like this thing. And I tried to pick two things, one of which I think is pretty obvious and one thing that might be a little bit obscure, not super obscure. So, and I know I think McDee has at least one thing as well. So Severance, we're dealing with this sort of the dystopian kind of satire, this feeling of being trapped, this feeling of not being able to escape, this sort of sci-fi element where everything is a little surreal. And when I combine all those elements, I think of a television show that I really enjoy that aired in the 1960s.
Oh, boy.
In the UK. Joe, have you ever heard of The Prisoner?
No.
You've never heard of The Prisoner. Okay.
I don't think so.
The Prisoner is a fantastic show. I've been watching it, doing a rewatch the last couple months, and it holds up. It really does hold up. And if you're someone who has no problem watching classic Star Trek, for example, you will have no problem with The Prisoner, because I actually think it's a little bit of a better written show. The premise is this, and you can get into this if you're not like a satire sci-fi guy. A secret agent for Britain, you know, an MI6 guy or whatever, decides to resign. He gives his resignation and he walks out of the offices of government, and he goes home and they pipe gas into his apartment and knock him out. And when he awakens, he's in this place called the Village, where the powers that be keep all these people they don't want to kill, but whom they want to like get the information out of their heads. And it's this quaint little country village that is surrounded by mountains and the ocean, so it's very hard to get out. And they basically play mind games with this secret agent, trying to get the information out of him that they want. And his character name is Number Six, because everybody in the village is just a number. So it turns into satire of all these different things, because like I just watched an episode where the village has an election and Number Six has to run for office. So all of these sort of like satires are kind of like are worked into the show. But essentially, he just keeps trying to escape over and over, and he's never quite able to get out. There's all these like weird sci-fi elements, like when you try to like swim out or take a boat out. At one point, he builds a boat and tries to take it out into the ocean. There's this big, weird white bubble called the Rover that comes up and it like absorbs you and captures you. And there's this creepy image of people like against the rubber of the Rover, like trying to get out. And it captures you and it takes you back to the village. And everything in the village is just really pleasant. And you know, there's always like great breakfast ready for you when you wake up, and every, you know, it just seems like all these like nice people that would live in a little English village, but all of them are really listening to you and watching you the whole time. And his adversary in the show, Number Six's adversary, is Number Two, who's the second in command, who's keeping him in this village and trying to get the information out of him. But Number Two changes, the actor changes every episode. And the conceit is that every time Number Two fails in an episode, they replace him with a new Number Two. And all these fantastic English actors play Number Two from episode to episode to episode. But Patrick McGoohan, the guy that plays the prisoner, Number Six, that he remains the same. And just one last thing. It's kind of interesting that he decided to do this show. The show is very psychedelic. It's very mod. It's very swinging 60s. Everything looks like a weird Austin Powers-y kind of like dreamscape the whole time. This guy, Patrick McGoohan, who starred in The Prisoner, before that, he did a straight, nothing weird about it, spy show called Danger Man. And he did that for like four seasons and he hated doing it. And then he pitched, he felt like a prisoner doing that show. So then he pitched The Prisoner and they let him do that show. And that show let him get out all of his like countercultural ideas and things that he wanted to express when he was having to play, you know, the man in Danger Man. That's my long spiel on The Prisoner. The best part is
awesome.
It's awesome. The best part is you can watch it on Canopy, which is the free app from your library service. If you have a library card, you can get on Canopy and you can watch all, I think it's like 17 episodes of The Prisoner. And you can see why it would be like Severance. Let us get McD on here and see what he was going to talk about. McD, you have your pick?
Did you guys watch The Dollhouse?
Oh, hell yeah, with what's her name? From Buffy.
Sarah Michelle Gellar?
No, the other one. The Dollhouse was a Joss Whedon show, right?
It was a Joss Whedon show. Only ran two seasons. But it was about people that would have skills implanted in them. They were dolls to go assassinate people, mostly. Mm. You know,
Eliza Dushku.
Also, the actress who played Gemma in Severance is in the Dollhouse. She's one of the dolls. Yep.
Huh. Dyken Lockman. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I like everything Dyken Lockman is in.
Yeah.
Basically.
Dollhouse was awesome, and I remember watching it, and it was basically they took on a new personality each time to go on a mission, right? Yeah. They were these blanks that took on skills and personality to be the ultimate secret agents, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not as heady as Severance, but definitely has those vibes.
Dollhouse was a little heavier on the action, right?
Correct.
And then often there was kind of a mystery or something to the mission that they were on that you kind of mm-hmm. had to figure out.
Mm-hmm. So that's one. And there's one I just started watching, so I can't tell you if it's actually good, but it's called The Rig, and it's on Amazon.
The Rig.
Streaming. It's like a mystery happening on a oil rig in the North Sea.
Nice.
And it's definitely very like horror themed, but there's an evil corporation clearly controlling how they're dealing
with
what
they're... supernatural thriller. Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's Love an Oil Rig.
Wait, is it based on a book? I read a book that has almost this exact story. Like, I know that, you know, shit going down on an oil rig. It's not exactly, there's plenty of those, but like, it was like it was in the North Sea. It was a supernatural sort of situation. What's that book? I read this. It was like a thriller. It was super fun.
Was it called The Rig?
I can't remember if it was called The Rig. I don't think it was.
This does not appear to be based on anything,
okay.
At least according to the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, same. That's where I am right now.
But damn, I'm going to watch that, McD.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, like oil rigs, man, they're dangerous.
Especially when there's like supernatural threats.
The regular threats are plenty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's that Mark Wahlberg movie where he's on an oil rig? And he's like, oh my God, the oil rig is exploding.
Deepwater Horizon.
Deepwater Horizon.
Deepwater Horizon. My favorite title.
So good. So good.
What, was that not
That's
the
like
name?
Almost as bad as the title K-19, The Widowmaker.
Was that not the name of the oil rig that blew up?
I think it's a true story. That's probably why.
Okay.
I liked that movie. I want to watch it again. I remember liking it the first time I saw it. I found the book. It is Deep Storm by Lincoln Child. It's a classic like airport novel.
Oh, yeah.
And it was cool. It was I dug it. It was cool. It's like,
dude,
you know, it has that great like supernatural kind of prologue where it's like, the guys are just working, you know what I mean? And then they dig a little too deep and somebody sees something. They're like, what is that? And it's just like cuts to black, chapter one, you know.
Love it.
So this is apparently part of a series with the title character being Jeremy Logan.
Ooh.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm suing. I should be getting a check for this.
Yeah. Clive Cussler has good things to say about it. So there you go.
There you go.
That's all you need to know. Let's McDermott, you don't have any more of these, right? Any more
recommendations?
Recommendations based on Severance, but
I gotta be like, read the Pierce Anthony book Killabyte.
I've read Killabyte. Holy shit. Yeah. Piers Anthony, a problematic individual.
On a long enough timeline, we all are.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and I take your point on that. But I will say, Piers Anthony, there was always weird sex in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes not in the fun way.
Mm-mm.
I'm not against weird sex in a book, but sometimes it was not in a fun way.
Yeah.
Interesting. I read Killabyte, and Yeah, I had many sleepless nights after reading it, and not because I was scared. Okay. I have one more thing to say about if you enjoy Severance, you really have to read anything by Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
I can't think of a show that is more Philip K. Dick than Severance. And Philip K. Dick literally has a story called Paycheck where they erase your memory when you work on something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made into an excellent John Woo Ben Affleck movie from 2003 that you have to see.
You got an eye roll from McD on that.
I'm going to go ahead and say top two movies of all time. Wow. Paycheck starring Ben Affleck.
Old.
Wow. Pierce,
top two.
Pierce Anthony
two.
Wrote the novelization of Total Recall based on the Philip K. Dick short story.
Based on the Philip K. Dick story, we can remember it for you wholesale. Interesting.
Yeah, so, yes.
Wow. I mean, it is absolutely fucking absurd to base a movie on a story and then have someone write a novelization of that.
Yep. That's very, very late 80s.
That's Philip K. Dickian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's How Dickian. Dickian.
It's so Dicky.
Dick facts.
Yeah.
As we used to say on the Glass Cannon podcast. Cool. Well, thanks for the
idea.
We got
to talk about talk about just Philip K. Dick one time on the show. We need to have
jot that down. Jot that down.
We need to have a segment where I just say, and we should have a segment on that.
We need a segment suggestion form.
Yeah. A form request form.
Form request form. Let's see if anybody else has anything to add to this real quick before we do comments. Steve, we tried to bring you up earlier, I think, but it didn't work. Now you're on your phone, it looks like. Steve?
Howdy.
Hey,
How's it going?
We wanted to get you in before we had to cut and run. What's going on?
I appreciate it. I was refamiliarizing myself with technology. So I can, not that I need to, but I can vouch for Jared. I think The Prisoner is kind of like the only recommendation if you want to like hard stick to kind of like the general feeling of Severance. The Prisoner is a trip. I'm not as passionate about it as Jared is. I'm not convinced it holds up, but I'm happy to defer to Jared's expertise on that one. Prisoner is worth watching just to say like what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah. The trippiness of it is just just to look at the trippiness of it is really fun.
It seems like Patrick McGowan must have had pictures or something of people because like they just did kind of whatever they wanted. They're like, yeah, sure. Go with this crazy story. Yeah.
Are you saying he must have been able to blackmail the executives?
Absolutely.
That made the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they really gave him a blank check for that one for sure.
Like if you're going just with sci-fi and if you want to veer off a little bit, I can't recommend enough Travelers. I think it's on Netflix. It's got a whole time traveling thing. You know, it's not Severance. Don't get me wrong. But Travelers is really strong sci-fi. Couldn't recommend it.
Yeah, that's Eric McCormick from Will & Grace, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
I've seen that poster of that show. I've never actually clicked on it.
It has an interesting premise. It is like Severance.
Thanks
a little
for calling in, Steve.
Very, very, very tangentially like Severance, because I believe they have to travel into other people's bodies and sort of take over their lives. That's how time travel works in that universe.
Yeah, I'm vaguely remembering this. I remember like when it first came out and people were talking about it, I was like, so wait, it's just Quantum Leap? But it has some different twists, I guess.
That is like Quantum Leap. You're right. But very different focus, very different vibe. Yeah. And I think it's Canadian. You got to love the Canadian sci-fi shows, your Orphan Blacks and things like that. Maybe it's not Canadian, but I think it might be. There it is. Travelers TV series.
All right, well, let's move on to comments below here as we wrap
Canadian
up the show.
Specialty Channel Showcase. I was right. I can tell
it.
You name a show, I'll tell you if it's Canadian. That's just one of the talents that
right,
I have.
The Kids in the Hall.
Canadian.
Correct. Battlestar Galactica. The new one.
Canadian.
It was shot in Canada. I don't know if it's Canadian.
That's but Canadian. That counts.
That counts. I think all I'm going to give you are like Canadian shows.
Right, of course. SCTV.
Yeah. Exactly.
Schitt's Creek.
I was just going to say Schitt's Creek. Amazing.
Continuum.
Let's get some comments below before we bounce. Look, the reality is there are people that listen to and watch this show in droves, Jared, that are not here with us live, are unable That's to right. be here with us live. And sometimes they chime in with their thoughts or ideas that might have been able to get on air if they were here live, but right. didn't happen. So I mentioned this last week offhand. We should read some comments of people that would have added an interesting little wrinkle to the show, or just something funny and stupid. And you were like, we're doing it next week. So I was like, all right, I'll look through and I'll pull a few things. Obviously, we're running short on time. So I'm just going to mention a few things here, and we'll do this again in the future. So please, by all means, be encouraged to chat in on YouTube. Go to the YouTube release of the show and write in some comments there. And
keep those comments coming.
We might read them up here. So just from last week, we were talking about action heroes and stuff. This one from Ben Allen, 7403, says, my favorite bit of trivia about Die Hard, which I never knew this, is that it wasn't until the fourth movie that the script was actually written as a Die Hard movie. The first movie was an adaptation of a short story, and the second and third were unrelated scripts that they changed the main character's name to John McClane for, and then threw in some stuff about his wife. I never knew
that. That's amazing. Yeah, that happens, right? I mean, but they that kind of action movie, a lot of people were writing it at that time, and you know, they all feel like Die Hard movies now, don't they? They feel like they're of a certain theme and mood that fits that original movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one from 2 weeks ago, I'm going to bounce around a little bit. When we were talking, we brought up D&D settings. You talked about buying an Eberron book, and Donovan Ling says, definitely do a D&D world settings show. So many options to go in depth about.
Well, I have good news, Donovan, for you.
We're doing it next week. That's right. Yes. Next week, tune in live, 12 o'clock Eastern, if you can, if you want to get on the show. We are going to do a chunk-tacular D&D settings show. So much nostalgia, so many wonderful memories, and so many great guests. We're going to be bringing on Eric Mona, publisher at Paizo, is going to join us, who, as Jared said, literally wrote the book on Greyhawk.
Yep.
And Skidmar is going to join us as well on that show. So we're going to have a big old blowout Glass Cannon Radio next week.
And it's going to be all campaign settings. It's going to be,
whoops, all campaign settings. We're going to do it all next week. A couple great guests. That's going to be really, really fun. And then, whatchamacallit, at Linus, 4D1 in that same show said, I would love a discussion about the campaign settings of Pathfinder. Tian Jia, Arcadia, Ustalav, Numeria, etc. There's a lot that the world of Galarian has to offer. I agree. So that could be another one down the line. You and I, and you are getting more and more familiar with Galarian and seeing that there's a lot of interesting.
Galarian. Yeah, I love Galarian. I love Galarian.
Very, very interesting. Let's go back to last week where we talked about VTTs, Theater of the Mind. At Mecha Maya wrote in something nobody said during the show. As someone with aphantasia, it always sucks to have to play Theater of the Mind because I literally can't visualize things in my imagination. Like my brain is incapable of it. So VTTs and maps and minis are honestly essential for me. I had not heard of that before, but thank you, Mecha Maya. I looked it up, looked
into it. Mecha Maya, you should play with minis and maps then.
Yes, that would be highly recommended. Can't form images in your mind. What a Theater of the Mind would really suck. Would really suck if you suffer from that. Here's another one. A fun fact. This goes back to our discussion with Brian Holland and Mad Max Fury Road. At Snorpin Base 4196 says, there's a detail someone pointed out about Fury Road. It's that every time Max just shoots from the hip, he hits perfectly. But every time he tries to aim, he misses.
Yeah.
And opposite, Furiosa, every time she shoots from the hip, she misses. And whenever she's aiming, she's a beast of a shot. It's just this lovely little thing, I think, put into
that
have
should be
them
some
meet
kind of
each other in fights. Like
some kind of feat or flaw in a role playing game. You know, you're good from shooting at the hip, but you suck at aiming or something like that.
Moving along, Jared, you remember you went off on a little rant on skipping intros?
Oh, yeah. I was right about that.
At Travaldo 1559 says, I never skip Glass Cannon intros. There you go. Well, thank you so much. There you go. We appreciate it. That's we also important. Talked about good co-op games. As far as I remember, this never came up. At Jell Roberts says, Deep Rock Galactic is the greatest co-op game. It never gets boring. I played a lot of Deep Rock Galactic.
I don't know it.
Can't believe I didn't mention it. Jared, I think if you could play a video game again, you would love playing Deep Rock Galactic. It is okay. Sort of a quasi-sci-fi dwarven mining simulator. Well, really? Not simulator. It's very arcadey. But basically, with your friends, you tunnel beneath the earth, and you have to, get a bunch of ore and get out before unknown horrors from the depths kill you all. And so you're just racing around, you have somebody's an engineer, somebody's a gunner, somebody has radar tech, somebody has whatever, and you have to find ores, mine them out, and you'll be cutting ores out of stone while your allies have to cover for you, because it'll be warning, monster swarm, and they start coming out, and they're just trying to shoot at your back while you're just drilling in the stone and keep them off me. It's really fun.
That
really
sounds
fun
awesome. Does it get sexy at all?
I don't remember any sexiness. No.
Okay, it's probably not for me then.
Probably not for you. Yeah, you prefer those pornographic video games.
I like a sensual video game.
All right, two more. This is from episode 7 of Glass Cannon Radio. We talked about, this was interesting to me. I mentioned, how do you clue in your players that the threat they're about to face, they're not meant to fight? Right. And I said, sometimes I'll literally just tell them the AC of a creature. I'll just speak in the meta to the players, so that it quickly describes to the characters what they're seeing. They're seeing an unbeatable force. And so Ben Allen, someone who we just mentioned a second ago, had another great comment. One way to communicate to players the level of a threat they're about to face is what I think of as the Worf maneuver from Star Trek The Next Generation. Worf was always the biggest, toughest guy on the crew. So when the Enterprise would encounter some alien, the writers would communicate how incredibly powerful it was by having it throw Worf around like a rag doll. So before the encounter, you can introduce an NPC to the party, describe them as being incredibly badass, and then he joins them in the encounter and gets epically murdered right away. And then it's clear to the party that if they want to choose to mess around with this thing, they would die. So anyway, I thought that was a fun Worf maneuver.
I love that.
That's so good.
Thanks,
Ben. And then finally, I said that I'd mention Dungeon Crawler Carl again. Just a note from Glenn Luke, 5985, who wrote in and said, I'll try Dungeon Crawler Carl, but I have a suggestion for another easy and fun read. A good lit RPG genre series is Robert Bevan's Critical Failures. Quick read, dirty jokes, audiobooks are great too, and there's 10 books in the series with multiple short story anthologies. Give it a shot. It's a cheap read and available on Kindle Unlimited. So there you go. One little, if you liked Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Another lit RPG.
Yeah. If you're interested in more lit RPGs, Robert Bevan's Critical Failures. Original Jim says, oh yeah, I read the first 4 or 5 of those. Not too shabby. Well, there you go.
Yeah, I've heard so many lit RPGs have been recommended since we did Dungeon Crawler Carl. It's an entire genre.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I don't want to promise it, but as part of the whole D&D campaign settings next week, we may just announce a new book for book club. Just saying.
Yeah.
There's something on the fire, Jared and I have been discussing. This might be announced next week, so tune in. I think we may pull the trigger on something. So,
Dragons of Autumn Twilight.
Dragons of Autumn Twilight! I love it. Amazing.
That was the first Dragonlance novel.
The first Dragonlance. Well,
that's not the book. That's not the book, guys. I was making a joke.
That's not the book.
I was not making a joke. I was just making a joke. The actual first book is going to be... The actual next book is going to be Spelljammer Beyond the Moons. That's going to be the next book club book, so we can learn more about Spelljammer.
So good.
I am going to read this. I just read an Eberron novel, Joe. I just read an Eberron novel called City of Towers.
And this is just to really immerse yourself in the world and setting and everything. So when you
I was just into Eberron for about 2 weeks, and I was like, I had just read a kind of a heavy book, like a nonfiction book, and I was like, I need something I can finish in 5 days that is just silly and stupid. And boy, it fit that bill. So
awesome.
Yeah, these old role playing tie in novels are fun.
Well, that's going to do it for us. Seriously, write those comments into YouTube if you didn't get on the show today or you want to get your thoughts in there. I'd love to read them again on air. That was really fun. And thank you all for watching and interacting with us, whether it's here on Discord, on Twitch, or on YouTube. We're live every Wednesday, 12 o'clock Eastern. Come check us out there. But otherwise, big show next week. Eric Mona joining us. Skid joining us. D&D campaign settings. We're going to have callers on the show. Come talk to Eric. Atos. Talk to Skid. Yes. Oh,
we're going to visit the domains of Dread. We're going to go to Kryn.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. Kryn. I remember Kryn. All right. Take it easy, everybody. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's time to make your membership official. Start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Niche at jointhenaish.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenaish.com and use code GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and content you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenaish.com and use code GCN30 at signup to get your first 30 days for free. Tell your friends, come join yourself and see what everybody's talking about when you join the Niche today.